another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson, the host of Laura Lynn Live. Laura Lynn, it's good to be back and to talk about this weird Lazarus mess, among other things. It's so odd because you and I have a little bit of a gap in between when we record and talk, and I've been going down paths of research, several paths of research since we talked, and had a few conversations with people, and it's weird to me how they all seem to come to circle back to you. I had a conversation just yesterday with Pellegrino Walk, and we were talking about Dean Briggs, and they had mentioned it casually. I'd not seen it until talking to you, but this weird Lazarus prophecy, and parts of the reasons why these apostles seem to support each other and lift each other up. And it all goes back to what Chuck Smith called it, the Moses model. But basically, it's a model where the apostles are untouchable by the people. They are accountable only to God, not accountable to the people. And they are, I jokingly call it the Apostolic Governance Committee, but essentially they are only subject to governance by other apostles. So another apostle says, hey, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, and if you fall, I'll lift you back up. So we're seeing all of this kind of come together, and you mentioned this weird Lazarus prophecy, so I thought it'd be good to talk about this for a while, but this is a mess.
This is really a mess, and thank you for having me on again, John. I have such good feedback. I believe that you are, more than you know, changing the dynamics that has happened with some of these people who had bad information and thought that William Branham was all that and didn't have the real facts, and their eyes are literally being opened and they are being awakened to the truth, and that's because of the incredible work that you're doing. So I have been really honored to be a part of it, because William Branham, you know, as we've talked about in the past, was associated lightly and maybe not so intensely with my church. Nonetheless, I believe he came to speak there. I think you've pointed out things to me and I'm like, oh my Lord. I hasten to say that it is my understanding that I think that Reg Lazelle may have cut ties because just not really gone down the Branham. I certainly did not hear it in all my years of growing up, but we did have aspects of it that was still being used at Glad Tidings. So fast forward to the recent exposures that I've made of Daystar, and there's about to be a breakthrough regarding Daystar. It's going to be some good stuff coming out, and I can't say much more than that. And maybe by the time this airs, it'll all be pretty out there. But there's some breakthroughs coming. God is not done. And he is a just God. And he brings along people who are courageous enough to speak the truth, to stand up for what is right. And so when I began my Daystar show on the Daystar Canada Network, my husband and I moved to Kelowna. Then when we moved to Kelowna, we start going to the church of Art Lussier. Art Lussier had been my friend. He had done these Battle for Canadas, including celebrating the 1948 revival in North Battleford, Saskatchewan. And that's kind of where I really began to get to know Art, because he was bringing everyone together to celebrate that movement. Fair enough. Probably some good things came out of it, but ultimately some weird stuff came out of it too. So what happens is I become Art's friend, Art Lussier's friend. I'm invited to the battles. I'm invited to speak. I'm sort of in a somewhat inner circle, although I wasn't invited to the drinking parties. And later I realized, like, why? Why did I not get an invitation to be at the drinking parties? I mean, I thought I was their friend. Of course I would say no, and I wouldn't be the one drinking my face off anyways, because apparently that did happen behind the scenes. A whole bunch of terrible things have happened behind the scenes with Art Lussier. There's another incident from 2010 when a fellow that he was traveling with, they did this big ministry and everything, and the main guy raped an 18-year-old girl. And all of this covered up, hidden, all of it a disaster and a mess. Art Lussier is part of it. They get up and announce that there was an affair, and he's, you know, because it came out, the woman actually spoke out and went public on Facebook with a post about what had happened. Oh, we're so sorry. And he confesses an affair, which was not an affair. It was an assault. So Art Lussier and this gang of wolves, the wolf pack in Canada, have you know, been coercing together, and basically the oversight committee that overlooks everything has reinstated him after a pretty long battle, and I have gone after him publicly. When I'm in Kelowna, Daystar ends, and I'm kind of like, you know, Lord, it's weird that you would move me 4 hours, me and my husband, 4 hours away just to do the show, and now it's over, because God doesn't, he's not surprised. He knew that he called me to Daystar to expose Daystar. There, I guess there was something about me that God knew I wouldn't put up with it, and I would call them out, and I wouldn't be part of you know, a network that has Joni Lem in open, unrepentant adultery, an adulterous marriage to the woman, she's the woman, but to the man, you know, who is the husband of her friend for many years. So it's just unbelievable. And I thought, well, I'm not going to have my show, you know, on this this network of depravity. I've learned a lot in my few years of being on this planet. And that is that I have the fear of the Lord because I have seen his judgment. I have felt his scourge. I have seen the discipline of God in my own life, and I do not want it. I never want that again. So I really attempt to walk with clean hands and a pure heart so that the Lord can help me to be effective on this planet. But there is a pack of wolves. There is a group of people. They do not have the fear of the Lord. They are operating in a spirit of lust, sexual depravity. They are using the gospel for gain, and they are grifting the people of God. And that group resided, one of the key players, Art Lussier, in Kelowna. So as I'm there, I start going to his church, and then there's a whole rumbling because there's a Facebook group that has been made to tear Art Lussier down and to expose him, because there were people that were very hurt, and they were finally, after 20 years, being able to speak. I end up talking to a whole bunch of them. My intention, in all honesty, was to protect Art Lussier. This was my friend. He does these big meetings across Canada. How can this be a bad guy? You know, God is using him. Now, as I went on, I have found out that the fruit has not been good at all. The things that he pulled off in 2022, he yelled at a guy in front of 1,000 people, like he's a spiritually abusive man. So many things. And him and the people that he runs with, Nicole, their right-hand person, she is nastier than nasty gets. His wife, Heather, has many, many people that report on how very mean-spirited and controlling. So she controls all the money of this financial thing. So that's a conflict of interest. People have been complaining. They have been standing up and wanting this to be dealt with and there to be transparency. So short story ending to all of this. I then am led to speak to the two Indigenous ladies who have allegations that Art Lussier has molested them. And I was undone. I believe those girls because there's a ring of truth. The ring of truth tells you that what somebody is saying is true. So when you have to decipher between somebody that says, oh no, that's a lie, and the person who's telling the truth, and it just has that ring, it sounds right. Not to mention there's three other Indigenous women that have made allegations that they have been molested by Art Lussier. And so in light of all of this and all of this presented to an oversight committee, then Julie Royce does a story on the woman that married woman that Art Lussier sent his bare butt pic to. So this is Apostle Barebutt now in Canada. Apostle Barebutt sends his picture. Now, this is only one of a couple of hundred other pictures of him in a steamy shower. What he got her to do was to go onto an app that quickly deletes, within a few seconds, deletes pictures, deletes the conversations. He set that up early on with her. They were just friends, you know, but he groomed her for a season, and it would send songs, would send pictures, a lot of talking, deep, intimate talking, sharing things. He shared things about his relationship with his wife and things like that. And then ultimately there was a plan to meet privately. And the Lord woke that lady up in a really powerful way. He woke her up and she came to her senses, so to speak, and realized that she was on a very bad path to ruining her marriage and to doing something very wrong. So the Lord woke her up. So all of this gets exposed. It comes out. The Oversight Committee for Art Lucier, investigating all of these allegations against him, realizes that, man, there's a whole lot of stuff here. But what do? Well, they kind of quit. And then the board members basically reinstate Art Lucier. The very week after the bare butt picture comes out, he's now back in the pulpit singing and preaching. So the bare butt picture was sent approximately 2.5-3 years ago. And this is a man that has a predator record. And I think what you're exposing, John, is that these men are there, and there is a link, and it's back to Branhamism. It's back to Manifest Sons of God. Dean Briggs steps into the picture because Dean Briggs is a good friend of Art Lucier. I have asked him repeatedly, including yesterday, in texts that I'm sending Dean directly, because I have had communication with him. He has been on my shows in the past. We were actually having a dialogue over the Nephilim and things like this. So Dean Briggs, before I've had my awakening, before I've understood what's going on, and I have been friends. We've communicated, you know, from a distance, nothing real personal. But I have his text, and I'm able to ask him, are you receiving money from Art Lucier? Because I can't understand one single thing that would be reasonable to put any, you know, context of what could be happening, that this last week, in spite of Art Lucier's terrible fall, all of the stuff, all the sin, two Supreme Court civil suits in British Columbia, the province where I am, against Art Lucier, that Dean Briggs would think that supporting him to be on the pulpit, bare minimum, would be a good idea. Dean Briggs called out IHOP KC, called them a bunch of like BSers, and said to them that they are, you know, not being transparent. He was super mad about the cover-up of Mike Bickle, and he just went to town on them. But all of a sudden, Art Lucier, his friend, he's on his pulpit, he's preaching at his church, and then he's giving him a prophetic false word. And he says it in this way. And, you know, he's like, Art Lucier. You know, like, why is it that guys like him and Joseph Z, they get the voice of God? You know, they're actors, actually. So many of these guys are actors. And I'm going to be quiet in just a minute, John, because I want to let you speak. But so Dean Briggs, this, you know, this last week, he says, you know, Art Lucier, God is calling you as a Lazarus to come forth. You know, and I'm pretty sure he puts in, though it stinketh, because boy, does it stink. Everything about this ministry stinks. Financial allegations that are just coming to light. I think there's going to be an investigation, and what he's done, his predatory ways. I'm talking about Art Lucier. And then Dean Briggs, of course, who is all into this Manifest Sons of God, but somehow seems to deny it at times, according to some guests that you've had on, and I appreciate their testimony. You know, this is a disaster and a full-blown mess, and all of it leading back to what you talk about all the time, John, that there is a background to these guys. It leads them into deception. It is a foundation of sexual misconduct, financial misconduct, false prophetic words, false prophecies, false apostleship, Art Lussier calls himself an apostle. I think that a woman that he actually had inappropriate relations eventually said he was an apostle. So I guess that makes him an apostle. So to us, he's apostle bare butt and nothing but. This is nothing but a sham that's going on in Canada.
It is. And the funny part is, I've not even yet got to the good stuff in my research and publications. There's so much more. When I left the Branham Cult, I actually talk about this in the first big book that I've got on the website, which is Preacher Behind the White Hoods. I talk about all of the meticulous effort that went into studying Branham. What I did not talk about are the different rabbit trails that you find in history when you do this, because Branham is, it's like a spider web. You're connected to literally everyone. And the curious mind that I have, I want to know why. Like, how did this little no-name guy from Jeffersonville, Indiana, little town nobody's heard of, how did he get connected to the Kardashian family? How did he get connected to all of these people where he's got an audience with Richard Nixon? I mean, when you're looking at this, you're thinking, there's just no way. I couldn't do it. I don't have the means to do this. But at the same time, I'm a businessman. I've been in business meetings, I've been in conventions, I've been in gatherings, and I know how it works when you start connecting with people. You get so in my meetings, I would go connect with a person, they're talking about the business they do, has no relation to what I do, but I say, oh, I know a guy, you need to connect with him, he would help you. So they connect, they start, basically what I'm talking about is a network. You start establishing a network, and then within that network, whenever I need something, I can go to this guy, he's going to say, well, I recommend this other person, and we have this collaborative effort of business. So as I'm studying Branhamism, and I'm finding all of these things, I really had a motivation because I thought there would be enough people who were filled with the desire for truth, that when I started publishing all of the hideous things that are covered up in Branham's past and just outright lies, I thought there would be this mass exodus where everybody's just fleeing. But what I came to realize is there are a lot of people in the seats who are not there because of Christianity. They're there because this is their collective group. That's really the only reason. My family was in it, so I'm in it too. They're not there for Jesus. They're really there for their family. And there are other people who are there for other reasons, which I won't say on this podcast. But the thing that I began to understand is the networks that were set up were so far even bigger than Branhamism. One of the guys I've mentioned to you is Roy Davis. And the only thing I think that I've mentioned to you was he was a Klan leader, because that's shocking to people. But that's not even the most important part. Davis was connected to fundamentalist religion. He was on the board of directors for the World Fundamentalist League. He was working in collaboration with many different denominations during a time when the Klan was seen favorable by the people. So he was seen as a political figure, a religious figure, a very good person. He was seen by these people who thought he was this religious elite who was, like Art Lussier, untouchable by God. Yet he is, as he's traveling through these evangelistic meetings, he starts to realize and recognize, my wife's back in Texas, my wife and kids. She's not going to know if I'm fooling around in Georgia. And fooling around turns into, well, she's not going to find out if I get married to another person in Georgia, gets married and thinks he's not going to get caught. The funny story of this is there was a lady in his one of his churches. He had multiple churches. There was a lady in one of his churches in, I can't remember the name of the town in Georgia, but he's preaching to his congregation. They don't know that he has a wife and kids and another church back in Texas. So he's holding revivals from Texas to Georgia. He's out in the middle of nowhere, far away from his wife, preaching, and a sister of a lady from the church he goes to in Georgia attends the revival because her sister's in that town and says, wait a minute, that's that guy that preaches back home. And the whole thing blew up. So they found out he's a bigamist, and they found that long story that I I won't get into. You can read the book if you want. But he is carrying multiple young ladies. He had this thing for young ladies. He's carrying multiple ladies across state lines for the purposes of sex, which is a violation of the Mann Act, a federal crime. And when he holds the big revival that attracted William Branham and created this whole mess, he's actually there because the government is trying to put him in prison for the girl that is on the platform with him, 17-year-old girl, who eventually became his wife, who he says, I'm not doing anything with her, but this it actually became his wife. So you've got this whole history of problems, not just sexual problems, but really a history of criminal activity by people who their motivation is really not even Christianity. Davis, there's no way this was a Christian man, but he was laying down the foundation for all of these connections. And the other thing that you and I haven't talked about, the full gospel businessmen really come into this picture. And people are familiar with Demas Shakarian. This, I don't know if you know this name, but he is largely responsible for the popularity and spreading of the charismatic movement. Whenever a charismatic started to form, he is the one who opened all the doors. Well, how did he do it? He brought businessmen to the picture, full gospel businessmen. So like my meetings, businessmen, A, well, I can do this thing and I can sell it, but I need customers. And on the religious side, well, come to our church. We've got all kinds of customers. And they start connecting people to processes, to products, to this whole thing. Well, it turns into this massive movement called the Full Gospel Businessmen. The founder was Demas Shakarian, who was Kim Kardashian's, I think, great uncle, if I remember correctly, the lineage. But the co-founder lived about 10 miles from here. He was a Branhamite. So there was a Branhamite in this organization probably through, I can't remember how many years, decades. There's a Branhamite in control. And they're establishing a network where businesses can talk to businesses, and they're creating this elaborate engine that sits underneath the Christianity. So when you see Art Lussier, you see all of these other people, yes, they're there for religious purposes, but they're a spiritual figurehead. And that figurehead is sitting on top of this elaborate engine that in many ways has nothing to do with Christianity.
Well, that begins to explain an awful lot, John, and that is the important information that we need to have, because we think sometimes, oh, this is just one church, one movement, one guy, and all the interlinking people. Then you have, like we see in Canada, Art Lussier is connected to this Steve Holmstrom. Now, Steve Holmstrom has said he believes that people are dead because they dared to speak out against the shenanigans of Kenneth Copeland. And he says all manner of ridiculous things. They just had Rodney Howard Brown come in, and then they're connected to Mark Brisbois. Mark Brisbois has some things in his closet that I'm sure he doesn't want coming out. And so they're all manifest sons of God Branhamites. Basically, Steve Holmstrom, closely associated with Art Lussier, who Art Lussier has recently turned over the very lucrative prayer group, like they do a firewall. It's called a prayer thing. It's really about the money. And I honor the wonderful people that pray. I do. Thank you, God, that people want to be involved in a prayer wall that operates 24/7. These are the good people that they use. But in order to do that, there's monies, there's donations, there's all kinds of things that happen. All of that gets transferred over to Steve Holmstrom, who says he wants to be just like Branham. That's his own words. He wants to raise the dead and all of this. They have no clue, nor would they listen. They tell all of their people that I'm sewer water. Anyone who speaks against all of this is they call us terrible names. And so we're kind of in a, we're in a battle, but the battle is the Lord's. So all I do and all you do is tell the truth. But what you're saying is making sense. It's like a network that people eventually buy into, like with Lou Engle and Dean Briggs. They're in the States. This is in Canada, but they all buy into the same thing. And you're talking about the foundation of where this came from.
Absolutely. So take it a step further. Christian identity. I use that phrase, and we've talked about it a little bit, what it is. But I've not really talked about what it means to the latter rain, or the reason why it even exists. If you go back to, I can't remember what year, so I think it's the 1920s, Henry Ford, very, very powerful figure worldwide, Ford Motor Company. He's publishing the Dearborn Independent, and he has a person who's working with him, right-hand man, who is pushing the Christian identity doctrine, very anti-Semitic doctrine, through his Dearborn Independent magazine. Because Ford is the one who is behind the Dearborn Independent, people saw this, all of this anti-Semitic rhetoric, as sponsored by Ford and therefore legitimate. And so it started to become adopted, and there were religious leaders who were adopting it. So the Christian identity doctrine itself isn't a religious doctrine, but the foundations that it was laying, one of which included dominionism, it is starting to be mixed with Christian rhetoric, because you had now Christian ministers reading this thing. And this is before Full Gospel Businessmen exist, but the same concept existed. You had very powerful people who were in business, who were pushing agendas, mixing with the Christian religion, and those ideas start to cross-pollinate. And once this turns into a movement where there are conventions, there are people who are gathering and meeting each other, well, one person's ideas combine with another person's ideas and develop into a different doctrine. And many of the concepts that are in Christian identity start to morph into what becomes manifested sons of God, especially the dominionist aspect of this. From the Christian identity side, they were seeing, well, we're going to have dominion over the Jews and the blacks. And so it fit within their world. From the latter rain side, we're just going to take dominion over the sinners. And so you had ministers who were adopting this, not knowing that the racist side existed, and on the racist side, not knowing that the Christian side existed. But the leaders who were bringing all of this together in this engine, they were aware. They saw both sides. And on the website, I've started to put names to some of these people. But the thing to understand is, when you're in this position of power, like Art Lussier, like Dean Briggs, and you're part of the conduit that links all of these different groups together, political groups, hate groups, Christian groups, charismatic, Pentecostals, mainstream, when you're part of that conduit, you see the information flowing both ways, and you become a facilitator. And that's where the problem lies, because the question I have, if you are facilitating evil in the name of Christianity, are you actually a Christian?
And you know, this has been really hard. If I could express something like personally troubling, is I've had to really reach out to leaders that have been my friends for a lot of years. And I've had one personal friend that we're still friends, but he's very disappointed in me for going public about Art Lussier. I released a tape recording of the oversight committee. Just they have no oversight. They don't have any common sense. They have no discernment. And this is affecting, there's beginning to be like a shifting in the land. This is affecting many people's relationships, what you're doing, John. You're a friend wrecker. Because what's happening is, and it's in a good way, and you're doing the work of the Lord, is that truth is beginning to shine its very powerful light into our understanding of what the word says and what these people's religious ideologies are, and they're not correct. So now we have the big names. I mean, one guy, one pastor, he won't talk to me because I brought to light some things about Bill Johnson. And like the manifest things, I don't know if you can even just repeat what's happening, because I think that what's happened even with Dean Briggs, who outed IHOP, they really do believe that they're kind of special in a way. They do believe that they, as apostles, have some special jurisdiction before God or something. Something like that. I know you know how to explain this better. And I'm just learning about all of this. And I'm like, no, you don't. And I will never put them in charge, you know, go to them asking to hear from the Lord. I couldn't care less. Y'all are given false prophecies about, you know, Joseph Z. He's prophesying from science journals. And the voice of God to Joni Lamb recently. Recently, Joseph Z. has this huge prophetic word for Joni Lamb. That, you know, God is, she is Esther and Deborah. She's literally in an unrepented, disastrous, I might say, adulterous marriage. Very recently, Doug Weiss, her husband, gets on the show and confesses that he's been porn free for 4 years. Okay, that's about when they started dating. So he was doing porn. He leaves his wife. He marries Joni. And he's confessing that he's porn free for four years. I mean, it's just too ridiculous. And all of these guys are just, you know, they're into these certain things. And I don't know what Daystar's thing is on the manifest thing. I have no idea. I've never heard them talk about it. But all of these friends, and they just think they're special. You know, John, they think they're special, and they're not special. God is exposing them.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. You know, I had this conversation with Pellegrino Walk just yesterday. I think that may come out before this one. But you have a different audience, and it's actually worth repeating this so that people can understand it. One of the primary doctrines of Christian identity is the idea that in the Garden of Eden, Eve mated with the serpent, and there were two bloodlines, one good, one evil. And this later developed into the race riots of the 60s because they were saying, this is an evil seed, we need to stop all of this race mixing, all of that weird mess. And here's the thing to understand. What happened whenever Christian identity began to merge with this fundamentalist religion to produce the manifested Sons of God doctrine, it tried to take a spiritual problem and humanize it. So in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve disobeyed God. That should be enough for you to understand. They disobeyed God. That's how sin entered the world. But what the Christian identity flavored doctrine did, it humanized the problem so that instead of looking to the original sin, you instead started to look at human blood. So they started tracing the lineage. Well, we can see that through this human blood, here's, you can trace all of the evil. This is the evil in the world. And it developed into people questioning, well, does this person have the evil blood in them or the good blood? And if they were to marry each other, it's a human problem and you can put a human face to it. The problem with doing this is you are literally rewriting the DNA of the Bible. You start to go through the Bible and you start to read it from a bloodline concept rather than what the Bible is actually saying, to the extent that you change the nature of Jesus. And they did this. Branham taught it. I was just studying recently Robert Morris, and Robert Morris is talking about how Jesus was fully human. And think about what this means. So you have a human who is dying on the cross for you. It would be like me dying on the cross for you. What can I do if I die on the cross for you? The manifested Sons of God doctrine tried to humanize Jesus and say that he was the ultimate manifestation of God. God had a thought and expressed it as the Word, and it came into Jesus as a spirit, and he became a Superman. And you too, friends, can become Superman. Well, when you teach that doctrine and you're humanizing spiritual things, well, now what do you do with the leadership? Because the leadership are teaching you, are you not a Superman? You should be able to do the same thing as the leaders. So the leaders had to take the human aspect and rise above it. So yes, it's still humanizing it, but now they're an upper tier of human. They're spiritually elite, essentially. And so the spiritual elite, they're not subject to the same rules of the rank and file member. So in doing this, they've created the cult hierarchy. And the problem is, once it transitioned into the New Apostolic Reformation, with all of these apostolic networks and all of these miniature cults, now you have pyramids of authoritarian control in network with each other, each one just as evil as the next, all of these various destructive cults. But at the top is a leader who, in many cases, is not even a Christian man, supporting other Christians in the network, who are claiming to be Christian, I should say, and they're aware. They're aware this person has sexual sin. They're aware of all of these other things. I'm told by people who knew Paul Kane, and I believe it because I know how all this works. I have seen this among the Branham cults. Some of the ministers will actually keep dirt on the other ministers, all of their things that they know will eventually be exposed, because now that other minister becomes a puppet on a string. If you don't align with this doctrine, if you don't do this thing that brings my money, I'm going to expose you for your affair or for your grooming or whatever this is. So there are men within these networks who actually know long before the exposure. And it turns into such a mess where, again, you look at all of this and you wonder, are these people even Christian?
That is so shocking. And they don't really come out with it, do they? Like, they don't just say, we believe such and such. Eve mated with the serpent. And do they get that from some writing? Like, John, how do they come up with this stuff?
Well, the ministers who teach Christian identity in its purest form, they go back to they try to use the King James Version, believe it or not, where it says the serpent beguiled Eve. And because not many people understand the meaning of that word, they'll say that beguiled means sex. And It's a weird, like, I could go through the history of how all of that developed, but the thing to understand is not everybody today who is preaching Manifest Sons of God even understands or knows where it came from. They have no idea the serpent seed doctrine. In about, I want to say it was maybe the 1970s, after the big exposure, whenever Kennedy was assassinated, all the Klan groups were exposed, this doctrine went underground. And many ministers started to teach that the original sin was Eve mating with a serpent. But then what happened is it turned into a spiritual problem, not a bloodline problem. So originally it was a bloodline, then the flood, and then now it's a spiritual problem. And what they did was they just tried to disconnect from the racism and the race riots that had caused all of the government investigations. Right after the Kennedy assassination, you can even see in Branham, his doctrine starts to shift on this. So over time, the original bloodline doctrine kind of got erased and forgotten within the movement, but they kept, like, these doctrines that were cross-pollinated and started to develop, they kept many of the doctrines, including the Manifest Sons of God doctrine, where it almost resurrected whenever the shepherding movement started to form. One of the key figures who was supporting the five shepherds was one of the most famous Christian identity leaders in the United States at the time. And he believed all of the serpent seed doctrine, all of the Manifest Sons of God, all of these things. But the shepherds didn't really say who he was and what he was doing. So nobody knew that they're working with a Christian identity guy. And eventually, he was a homosexual, and he got exposed for homosexual sin. So eventually, they were able to just push him out. This guy's a homosexual. We can't listen to anything he said. So they kind of wiped their hands from it. But the ideology that framed the doctrine still existed, and it became somewhat disconnected from the two-seed doctrine.
So what was so interesting about your friends that you've just had on? Is it, am I saying it right, Pellegrino?
It is Pellegrino. It actually, they had to explain it to me. It means pilgrim in Spanish.
Okay. So it's like I think of that water, you know, that beautiful water that you drink, Pellegrino water, isn't it? But, you know, they really exposed Dean Briggs, but it took quite a friendship, because some of these people, they won't talk about this openly. So you can be going to a church for a long period of time and suddenly discover that your pastor, in behind the scenes, because it's controversial, they're not speaking it or teaching it, but they finally would have to admit it. But you have to get in relationship, you kind of have to confront. And this is the relationship that the Pellegrinos had with Dean Briggs, which I'm understanding from a video that they have had, that he finally, yes, I believe in the manifest sons of God. But, well, then why not just say it, you know, out loud? Why are they all so afraid of speaking this?
There's where it goes back into, there's a history that everybody should study, and that's Gnosticism. If you understand Gnosticism and how it worked, it was the combination of many pagan religions with Christianity. And when you mix anything else with Christianity, what you get is not Christianity. Some of the religions that mixed in were called mystery cults. And what they taught was that they had this esoteric knowledge, these divine rituals, these mysteries. And if you come into the group, you know the mystery. But if you're outside of the group, we don't talk about the mystery, because then everybody knows the mystery. So that's how a mystery cult worked. You can go to the go through the history of the cult of Dionysus. I think I said that correctly. And they had these spiritual rituals where they were coming together, drinking wine, getting into a drunken frenzy. And the women had they had their hair up in this bobby pin, and they would pull the bobby pin out and go out and do the ritual where they were ripping flesh off of animals and weird things. Whenever you read Paul talking about the hair as a covering, he's actually in the area where all of this is going on. And there are women who are taking part of this in his audience, I'm certain. If you study that history, it's a fascinating history. But it is a mystery cult, and it is the idea that we have a collective esoteric knowledge. Those on the outside don't know the mystery, so they're lost. When we were in the Branham cult, we had many of these things that are now coming to the surface, but we did not talk about it to the outside world. We would talk about it sometimes. Some of the core doctrines weren't even preached from the pulpits, but whenever you went to the special things, which was like you'd go to the family gathering of the minister, or you'd go to some weird, some event that the church is holding, all the older crowd would get together and they would talk about all of the mysteries that we don't preach from behind the pulpit, because those are our special mysteries. So when you understand that concept, now apply it to the broader New Apostolic Reformation. It is still the same type of mystery religion. They won't tell you the history of how all of this developed, because that's our inside knowledge, and the world wouldn't understand it. That's the phrase that they always use. The world would not understand this mystery. So we keep it to ourselves, we bundle it up, and in the end, this is a story I don't think I've shared before on the podcast, so you're the first, but my grandfather was riding with William Branham. They were going out in the middle of Kentucky. I heard this story as I was riding through Kentucky, and my grandfather just happened to pass the exit. He said, right there, I sat in that restaurant with William Branham. And they were just having a casual conversation, and my grandfather was a Methodist minister who was trained in Methodism, so he had actually heard the gospel and converted to this destructive cult. He's talking to Branham about salvation, and he's confused. If you understand how his question's working, he was confused on salvation, which makes sense. Nobody in the cult even understood salvation. So he's asking the basic questions that are in the Bible, and he was telling this to my father. I was in the back seat. He leaned over and he said, and Branham leaned over to me like this, and I was asking him, so if that's the case, all you have to do is believe in Jesus and you can be saved. And he said, William Branham got quiet, looked around both ways, looked at me and said, don't you ever tell anybody that. And as a child, I'm hearing this thinking, oh, wow, that's one of the mysteries. But now as an adult, I'm looking back, This is a person who is actually trying to shift and change and conceal the gospel from the people.
That's an incredible story, and that should be a tweet that should go out. That should be one of those, we got to make this into one of those short stories. You know, how prevalent do you think this is, John? What are we talking? Is there a good number of ministers? We know their faces, we know their names, and they have twisted doctrine that we don't know they have?
Absolutely. So here's the fine line that I walk. You and I had this conversation right before this. Yeah. I have to be very careful. One of the reasons I focus on history and not the present, what we're doing here is a little bit outside of my normal. The dead people cannot sue you. And to the to the effect of the YouTube channel, the dead people can't take down your YouTube channel. It was only 2.5 years ago I lost everything. I lost all of it. They had attacked the website, copyright strikes. I actually had technology attacks. There were hackers outside getting into my networks, both my business and my religious networks, which was a little bit odd. But they attacked and they brought everything down because I had touched on the edge of something that appeared to be, I can't say what it is. That's outside of the realm of what I can safely say. It was something that was dangerous to them. I'll just say it like that. Once I said it publicly, they knew what I knew, and they brought everything down. So when you're talking about leaders today who understand all of these things, that everything that I've said to you, they know. It's nothing new to them. If you mention them by name, they can attack you and they can bring everything down. But if you make the public informed of the history, they can start to see through these leaders. You don't even have to mention their names. If they can understand the doctrines, where they came from, how they developed, how they shifted, they can see right through these people who are claiming to be apostle, because they're clearly not apostles.
So this is what everyone who's watching your show needs to know, to share this broadcast, to let people know that there needs to be an unveiling of this darkness, because what has been kept in secret, God will shout from the rooftops, and you're doing that. So in whatever ways that we can, we need to be courageous in exposing this. And wouldn't it be good, John, do you suggest that, let's say you've been going to a church for a while, and once in a while you do hear your pastor saying something a bit odd, like a bit of a different veering from normal, traditional, just the gospel. Wouldn't it be good if they would begin to build that rapport with the pastor to find out if they're in a church that has this ridiculousness? Because I'll tell you, my prayer is that it all comes tumbling down. If the Lord is returning for a bride without spot or wrinkle, then we've got some work to do, because the bride is a bit of a mess. Her bride gown is definitely spotty because she's in a pack of mud and it needs to be cleaned up. And we are very wrinkled. We've got all kinds of, you know, old traditions, old dogma, and, you know, the ideologies that are in behind the scenes. These are wrinkles in the body of Christ. And so I think that this exposure season that has really come forward, Jeremiah Johnson talking about it recently, and I don't know if he knows which way is up on the exposure, because he's kind of understanding the exposure. But again, he's had to go through his own, you know, wake-up call to putting out a completely false prophecy that he did, that Trump would be, you know, elected in 2020. And that really brought him to a place of brokenness and humility. And it's a wonderful thing, actually, that God does that to all of us. So we get a choice about whether we're going to be repentant and get through this. And because God is so gracious, he is close to the brokenhearted, and a contrite spirit he will not reject. So there is opportunity for repentance and then forgiveness from the Lord. But these guys running around with this errant dogma in their repertoire that they only release here and there, this has to be exposed. So it would be good if people begin confronting gently their pastors and say, do you believe in this serpent seed thing? And what of it? You know, would you say that this would be good, John, that people get courage and begin exposing in the worldwide church?
It is. However, the people need to be prepared before you do it. So with the mystery cults, there is the secret knowledge, the secret mystery. Like I said, we can't tell the outsiders. The outside, the world can't know our secret. With that comes also, if there is a person who is going to eventually expose the outside world to the inside, it goes both ways. We have to cut off the person. Whenever the person starts to ask questions to the pastor, if they are concealing the secret, you'll start to realize really quick if this is a cult, because immediately they'll chastise you, they'll chastise your family, they will make it very miserable for you. And it's weird because after we left the Branham cult, we're in one of the most destructive cults, and I started attending mainstream churches, and we've tried different ones. I don't think I'll ever even land on one that I will say, this is the church I'll go to the rest of my life. But one of the churches was a mainstream church, and it was the same way. If you started asking questions, immediately the questions was seen as a threat to the minister, and I didn't know why at that time. I'm starting to learn as I go that there are things that even the mainstream churches don't want you to know, and why. I want to know why. So you have to be careful and be cautious, because you may not just lose your connection to the minister, you may lose multiple friends, depending on how destructive the cult is. In the end, is that a bad thing? I don't know. If you're in a destructive cult, this is a quick way to get out of it. You'll find out really quick if it's destructive, but the pain that goes with it is very difficult. So people need to prepare themselves before they do it.
You're so right. And you know, John, it strikes me that this is good information to get out here on your broadcast, that a few of us that are paying a very high price and our social network is getting a bit smaller. People are, you know, saying they won't deal with us, won't talk to us, won't be, you know, associated. I want to say, I think it is a good thing. And the thing that we have to do is prepare ourselves that I kind of went, you know what? I got my two dogs who love me no matter what. I got my husband who is 100% committed to me, and he loves me no matter what. And then I got a few good friends who are also on this exposure and wake up journey, and I'm drawing close to them, and we are finding our people, and we are finding connection and finding relationship with those that agree and can walk together. And the rest of them, we do have to be prepared, because even the word says mother will turn against daughter, father against son. The kingdom of heaven brings violence in that it's not a physical violence. It brings the shaking and the ripping apart of that which is wrong and that which is right. And Jesus came to expose all of it. And in this era, think of the thousands of years that the enemy of our souls has taken to weave deception into every little corner of the Christian, what does Julie Royce call it? The evangelical industrial network, okay? It's like a network. So the enemy came in very gently with this idea and this idea, this false doctrine, that false doctrine, and all of it catering to everyone's ego, of course, because these guys, they love it. If I can get more power, if I can get more money, if people will see me as important, apostle so-and-so, with I hear from God, I'll let you know what God is saying. You know, as the enemy caters to the egos of man and gets this stuff in, we realize that it's going to be very hard to bring it all to full disclosure. But if those of us who are brave, so if you go into that meeting with your pastor, I guess you got to be prepared. That might be the last time. And then I would say be brave enough to tell those that are around you, well, we discovered some things. Let me just show you in the word, like we believe this and this, and we believe that they're teaching an errant gospel, an errant, you know, doctrine and be brave and then let the chips fall where they may. I'm good now. I do have a shrinking network. I've never been so sort of outcasted as this last year. My gosh, I went after Sean Foyt and the world lost their mind on me, the Christian world. I'm like, I'm sorry, what are we not understanding? His close group has allegations that the allegations are that he is quite the liar. I talked to another podcaster who said he'd come on my show, I haven't had him on yet, and said he worked with Sean Foyt and the guy lies all the time. Like it's uncanny for a Christian minister. Well, I think that's important to get that information. These people then are willing to put it on paper and have it released to the world so that you know that inappropriate actions have been taken by Sean Foyt. So behind the scenes, so a good singer, is that all we care about? Do we not care about the character behind the man? Do we not care about him putting people at risk of actually getting criminal lawsuits for some of the things he's done? Now, in this last couple weeks, he said that the FBI are asking him questions, and he's furious at, you know who you are, you Christian podcasters. The FBI has questions for him. Hey, pal, the FBI would have questions for me, too, if I was doing what you were doing. So it's come out. And you know, I think I lost a lot of followers. Like honestly, I've had to sit back here in this very chair, because this is kind of where I do my devotions in the morning. And I've had to think, am I willing to lose it all for the cause of Jesus Christ and for telling the truth? And you know what, John? I am. Everything. Though the Lord slays me, I will trust him. And he gives. God takes away in his just time. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Whatever friends I have to lose, though everything turns against me, if I am speaking what I believe the Lord has asked me to expose and to speak on, then I'm a happy camper and I'm good with it, John. And you know what? May we all get there. May everyone who's listening to this, there's people listening to this and your heart's beating a little because you know something ain't right in your circle. And you know that the Holy Spirit's begun speaking to you just the way he has spoken to John, to myself, to others of these podcasters and those courageous enough to lose it all to speak the truth. You know that in your circle, something's wrong. And we honor that in you and we honor your courage. And we pray that you will find courage and then contact us. We'll be your social buddies. We'll have some email, interaction. And some of the people that have exposed have become my new friends. And it's wonderful. And John, you're one of them. You're a new friend. I appreciate you. I respect you. And I am grateful for this season where this is coming out. We do have to be ready to let it all go.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for doing this.
You're very welcome.
If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org and Laura Lynn Live. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.